folks. Welcome to the 10 Laws with East Forest Podcast. Thank you for joining us today. Today, I have a podcast conversation with Mr. DJ Drez. Drez is someone that I have crossed paths with quite a bit out there on the road for several years. And, you know, he'll pop up like I was in Bulgaria and I'm like, "Hey, Drez, what's up? How's it going?" Or had a gig in Michigan last year. "Hey, there's Drez after me. What's up, Drez? We get to hang." So it makes sense that it's like, "Yo, let's sit down and talk and let's dig a little deeper." And the one thing I love about these podcast episodes is that I get to learn a lot about people that I think I kind of know, but then when you really take an hour to just listen, you know, you learn a lot more. And it's been a great lesson about just the art of listening and encouraging people to tell their stories and stuff. So I'm really looking forward to it. Before we get into that, I just want to let you know I did send out a newsletter this last week that announces the ceremony tour that's all over the place. So it starts off in Boise, Idaho on March 20th, where I'm going to be at Tree Fort Music Fest and also Yoga Fort playing on the Friday and Saturday of this same coming weekend. What is that, the 22nd, 23rd? But March 20th in Boise will be the release event for Ram Dass Chapter 2, and it's going to be at the El Karas Shrine. It's like a Shriner's place. It's actually the coolest venue. It's my favorite venue of all of Tree Fort. It's really big, has the best sound system. It's just good vibes, very vibey place. And because we're first, the floor will be clean, so we can do our ceremony concert, and you can sit down, lie down, go deep. So you can get your tickets for that through Tree Fort Music Fest. Also, Yoga Fort, if you have a pass just for Yoga Fort, you can still get in. And there will be some select tickets at the door as well. Not sure on the price on the door tickets, but come early, get your favorite spot, tell your friends if you're in or near Boise. But after that, you know, we're going to be all over, anywhere from Dallas to Austin to Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Massachusetts, Chicago, Portland, San Francisco, all the way to our August 9th Los Angeles release for the complete Ram Dass release. So I'm sure things are going to be added. So please stay on social media or check out eastforest.org and you can see, you know, where I'm going next. If you want to invite me, let me know. But people did listening gatherings for Chapter 1, right? And if you guys want to do a listening gathering for Chapter 2, I mean, anybody can do it at any time. But if you want us to send you some materials, and it's like lyrics and some prompt questions for discussions, maybe a talk from Ram Dass about one of the subjects he's talking about in the new songs, if you want to go deeper, stuff like that, just write us at info@eastforest.org. And we'll email you a little packet of information that you can use. And you can open that up to the public if you want to have an event to meet your community, or maybe it's just you and your friends. But what I'd really love to see is pictures of this online, and you can send us pictures, because I just like to see how it's all connecting out there. It's really, really fun and helpful. And for Chapter 1, we had listening gatherings in 35, 40 different cities, half a dozen different continents all over this planet. So it was super cool. And the idea is we're all listening to it on the same day, on the release day, which is March 22nd. It's a Friday. That's when music comes out these days. So if you're interested in hosting a release gathering, let us know and we can help you out. info@eastforest.org. And if you want to host an East Forest ceremony somewhere on my tour, like if it's not close enough to you and maybe we can connect the dots in between dates, let us know too, and we'll see what we can do. We'll get that conversation started. Another couple quick new events, the East Forest Fall Retreat in Southern Utah. That's sort of the flagship retreat that we do, is back on. We finally got things squared away, so you can now sign up and get the housing that you want. That's September 26th through 29th. It's a wilderness and wellness retreat in Southern Utah. That's at eastforest.org/retreat. And that's also where you can sign up, if you like, for the Summer Solstice Retreat at the Esalen Institute, which, of course, is June 21st through 23rd at the Esalen Institute, which is a wonderful hot tub and place out there in Big Sur, California. Other than that, I am just rehearsing, getting ready for this gig at Treefort and integrating in this new material, this Ramdas material into my set, which has been interesting and fun to like, you know, it's always weird when you play something, you write something in the studio, and I sort of purposely with this record did not think about how I was going to play it live. It's like, I don't want to, you know, worry about that. I just want to like really focus on serving these songs and getting this stuff together. And then of course, now I have the task of just figuring out how the hell I'm going to play it live. But I think I've got a good approach going, and it's been a real trip, like putting Ramdas through a PA system and getting these songs into the live setup, which is it's pretty exciting. So that's what I'm up to. I got to return my dog to my ex-wife on Monday. We meet in Pendleton, Oregon to do that. That should be fun. It's nice taking those long drives, but I got a little dog time for the last 3 weeks, which has been sweet. My dog, Kaya, she's 9 years old. She's my first dog. And I got to say, you know, one of my biggest teachers in life, mostly because she's a mirror to my own self and my own behavior. And she also reminds me of like my own animalistic needs and behavior, because I'm an animal too, right? Like I need food and water, and I need love, and I need structure and discipline, and I need my walks help me too, as to exercise. So it's really good to get that dog time and also just sit there and get some oxytocin releasing from some good snuggle time with a good pet, especially one that's part lab, because they're good at that stuff. But enough about getting in the weeds of the day to day. Today that I'm recording this is the first day. Well, it's not the first day of spring. It's coming up, but it's daylight savings time's ended, which I think feels like the first day of spring when we do that silly thing where we just collectively decide, okay, we're going to time warp. We're going to get in a time machine and jump ahead or behind an hour, which I never quite understand, but I always appreciate when the spring one comes, because then it finally feels like we're getting out of winter, and it's like, okay, it's later in the day and it's still light. And today, it is a beautiful day outside, so it has that vibration too. So speaking of vibrations, let's get into this conversation with DJ Drez. It was really interesting because we started getting into like, he's got such interesting discipline, you know? I don't know, I'm not even going to spoil it for you, but it's fascinating. It was really fascinating how it all came full circle at the end to me. Love talking to the guy. Please give this podcast a review. Just cruise down there. Give it 5 stars, and even better, write a little comment, you know, detailed review. Share the podcast on social media. Tell your friends. Help us reach new people. Help us have cool guests. Help me tell new stories that hopefully just give us all new ideas about how to live wisely and well in the world. So thank you for your support. All right. This is DJ Drez. You're asking me where I am?
Where are you? Yeah, man.
Right now, I am in southern Utah, in Boulder, Utah. I just came down here last week. I've been away all winter, but I just needed to like check in on my place and all that kind of stuff. But like the day before or the day after I got here, huge snowstorm came. Like several feet of snow.
Damn.
And so it definitely, I kind of saw that coming, but it's you know, that's when you're in a place like this, as nature runs the show. And I was pretty much stuck in my tracks. We didn't lose power, amazingly. So
that's a good thing. Wow. What a trip.
A lot of snow, a lot of ice. And I have not even been able to drive actually to my place. I ended up staying at a friend's place, which is where I'm at right now.
Wow. That's another that's another way of living.
Well, and I think the only way it works for me is because I'm sort of splitting my time here. So I spent part of my, I mean, this is technically my spot with my, my stuff is here.
Yeah.
As George Carlin would say.
Yep.
But yep. I've been spending a lot of time in Boise with my girlfriend, Marissa Rada Wepner, and then the rest of the time on the road. So it's actually kind of a nice, like, rest from all, you know, cities and roads to come here, even if it's just like a couple weeks, because it's just like super nature zone, you know?
That's such a good getaway. I kind of, I yearn for for that kind of getaway. That's cool, man. Nice.
You moved though, right? Cause you used to be in Venice, and if I remember correctly, you'd moved.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm from LA, but, moved up to the Bay Area about eight months ago. Yeah.
Very cool. So you guys in East Bay, or where are you at?
East Bay. Yeah. Yeah. It's nice. Good. Yeah. We're closer to Marty's mom now. So that's a good thing.
My friend, Mr. Morning Altars, do you know him?
I don't.
Those mandala things. Well, you should check it out. It's pretty cool. He lives in, well, he used to live in Richmond.
Oh,
so
cool.
I spent a lot of time visiting him up there. But so how are you finding it after, I mean, you haven't been quite a year. But I know you went through like those fires and that smoke. But aside from all that,
like that was the whole fires thing. That was a big deal. Having two kids and schools being shut down and just living life where you think the air is supposed to be a little bit better than LA, but it's a lot worse. but it's, that has gone, it's passed. And, right now it's starting to feel like a version of home. At first, for a long time, it felt like we were in like an Airbnb with all our stuff. And, Now it's feeling better. Like we're in the groove a little bit more. So, yeah.
Well, I know that's always hard, especially when you have a family and kids. It's just so much more work moving, but it's tough too when you're like a musician and your workflow and you're trying to get your space together and, you know, just kind of, do you have like a better setup now than you have before?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. Before I was in a loft situation without a door. Like anytime I made music, like it was just shooting.
When you make music,
throughout the
everybody's
house.
Making music.
Yes.
By default. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now like I have a door. Like just having a door is such a big deal, man. It's interesting because I noticed myself, I don't talk a lot per se.
In life, you mean?
In life. I mean, I listen, you know, a lot. And I listen to music, I listen to people, and I'm into it. And lately, like over the past couple years, I've been speaking a bit more. And all that to be said is just, there's an album I did called Alpine Swift that came out like 2 years ago or something like
2016, right?
Yeah, I think so. And so there's a few songs on there that I'm actually like using my voice. I'm singing a little bit and, you know.
Nice.
And I was doing that when like everyone would like, was out of the house or like very busy in another room or whatever. And it's just because it's not something I typically do. So I was just like shy about it combined with, you know, just whatever, being self-conscious. So now I have a door where I could do that a little bit more. And I've caught myself just recording my voice a bit more, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I've found that every time I move into a new space, and usually it's better and it's different, but there's some advantage, right? And that always ends up informing my music and my process. Like, I remember way back when I lived in Manhattan for a hot minute, and the first album ever made, was called Below the Bed, because I was underneath this little loft in a studio in Soho with my, you know, in a one bedroom where my friend was in the one bedroom and I'm in the living room, like the whole thing. There's no space. And then I moved to Dumbo and I had this, like a pretty big room. And all of a sudden, like I could stand up and play.
Yeah.
And I just remember that completely changed. I was like, oh, I sing differently. And like, I just, everything's just different. I'd never done that before. And it just, it changed my music.
Yeah.
And it's a good lesson, you know, because even to this day, I think about like investing in space or all these things. And I'm like, I know that will pay off. I know it will.
Yeah. Are you still there? I lost you for one sec.
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Okay, my internet's cool. Not wonderful here.
Okay, cool. Yeah, yeah. Every once in a while you have a robot voice. I've felt that each time I've moved, and this has definitely been, I feel like, well, it's definitely been the most significant move in my life. I've done a lot of traveling, but LA has always been home. I've always gone back there, and to be whatever 400 miles from there, that's its own special thing. But then you add a room with a door and just proper space to, you know, for my various percussion instruments, and I could walk up to my turntables and a keyboard, and you know, it's I'm really interested on what's going to come out of here next. I mean, it's bubbling and I feel it. It's just, yeah, it's really cool. It's a good new view from inside.
So what's your workflow like, or do you have, I mean, you've been doing this a long time. So what's your creative process like personally for making music? Is there a regular discipline for you, or is it something that's more like it kind of ebbs and flows and comes in waves, or speak about that a little bit?
Yeah. It's interesting. I've thought about that recently because, I had a little bit of time to step away from music. There's the music that I do, that I'm just testing out new ideas or techniques. And then there's the music I do that's kind of a job, and that could be included on an album. And then there's the music that I do that is really experimental that I think could end up being an album. And I almost lost my point.
Well, I want to hear that experimental music.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's kind of the stuff that I've been putting my voice on as, like, what if there were vocals on this track? Like, how would that sound? And instead of asking, my girl to come up and just do a test vocal, I do it. And it becomes even more experimental because it's my voice. And, so that's a whole other thing. But recently I gave myself some time to create away from music, which is just doing some visual art with some canvases. I had a handful of canvases of old art that I'm just like, I don't even want to put this up. And so I had an option to paint over it. So I painted over it and created some new things. And one of the things I did was, like without going into too much detail, I made it about my old art, the way I used to create, which was tape decks. Like the first mixtapes I ever made was like with a beat up turntable and another tape deck. And, so that was my process for the first couple years. And then, it turned into two turntables where I was, just going back and forth and making like what we'd call basement tapes, even though we're on the West Coast, there's no basements. But so, and then that went from getting a cheap little DJ sampler and making beats the most crazy ways with just little sample time to then getting the MPC 2000, which is sitting behind me right now. And nice. for a long time, it was going up to stepping up to the MPC 2000, going through old records and sampling, along with, you know, playing the pads, trying to figure out how to do bass lines and stuff, and recording on ADATs. And, but now, like, I look around me and that MPC 2000 is there. I have a couple different keyboards. I have turntables and a whole bunch of records. And a lot of times it might start with either something in my head or something that inspired it. Now, the music I make doesn't always sound like what inspired it. Like I might hear, I don't know, a Miles Davis tune or something, and that might inspire me to make like a reggae tune. It doesn't sound anything like it. So I might step up to the keyboard and start with a bass line and just, if my, in my head is going, you know, boom, 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 right? I'll try and put that on the keyboard. And so it might start with a bass line, or one day I might hear like an old, whatever, an old hip hop tune and be like, oh, like that break was ridiculous. I have that. Let me go sample it and then kind of refreak it a little bit. And so that day it might start with drums.
Are you sampling most of your drum tracks, or are you now kind of making drum tracks, or what's your process?
It's a combination. So I sample drums. I love the way old record sampled drum sound. And that's just the hip hopper MPC 2000, you know, like thumping on a drum machine kind of guy that's in me. With that being said, like I have this, what is that called? The Roland SPDX. And I have a kick pedal hooked up to it and sticks, and I have played my own breaks kind of, and done some cool stuff with that. There used to be a rehearsal space down the street from me in LA, and they had drum kits in most of their rooms. And a couple times I went in there with just like those kind of field recorders, and laid it down. And recorded myself just playing a little bit, just whatever, like some reggae kind of one drops and rockers kind of feel. And so really, like, my drums come from all over the place, but my number one source is I love sampling drums and chopping them up. And then percussion wise, like I have a kete, which is like a traditional Nyabingi Rastafarian, you know, drum that you would play and chant with. And you know, I got djembes and a set of tablas and all that stuff. So it really comes from all over. I used to really be like just hardcore hip hop dude. Like I just sample records and it all comes from this. And then for a while I was kind of hard on myself and like, no, I need to play more and got to learn to play. And so I was like making sure I programmed everything and like actually played it myself, figuring out chords and all that. But lately, like, and what I mean by lately, the past 10 years is like everything is open for me. Like I'm just like, I like it all. I respect it all.
Whatever works.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
If it has feeling to it, go for it.
Yeah, very much so.
Watch it all up.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, and I noticed too, I was just looking at your tour schedule like last year. You're very busy.
I stay pretty busy. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's tough. And I mean, you often travel alone, or is that true?
The last part broke up about alone.
Do you often travel alone?
Most of my travel is just me.
That can be really tough, you know, really tiring.
It is. It's very tiring. And there's a lot of stress that just comes with, there's so many levels of,
oh, I know.
Of what happens just, I mean, mentally, physically. And you add being a parent to being, to the travel. And that's like,
you have a really young one too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We have a 14-year-old son and a year and a half year old daughter.
Oh my God. Yeah. That must've been a trip, like going through that again now.
Yo, man, like it's been really amazing and beautiful and so, so difficult. She is a completely new experience. First of all, she's a girl and we've had a boy experience for the last 14 years. Personality wise, they're opposites. He was calm. He would sleep in between us and fall asleep and it was all good. She sleeps in between us and when I mean in between us, in between my wife and I, she sleeps in our bed and she doesn't sleep. Like she'll get the most 3 hours, but it's like, you know, she wants something or you get kicked in the face or, you know. the combination of being a parent and traveling and the lack of sleep and the desire to want to be, to do a great job and also the need to do a great job creatively. It's a lot. And then you add on like the basic, health stuff, like, you know, are you staying hydrated on the airplane? Are you sitting correctly? Are you not, you know, are you not slumping and, you know, getting neck aches and, the radiation that you get just by being in the air and me, like I'm someone who gets motion sickness and, it doesn't come out in like throwing up, but it comes out in like headaches and, just feeling terrible.
I'll spend extra money often if it makes the travel experience easier.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, I'm pretty specific about what I need to help me, just the basics. There's some things I'm just like, I can't do X, Y, and Z anymore.
You know? Yeah. Like, yeah.
Can't.
Yeah. I'm somebody who, like, I've never been a big partaker of any kind of medicine, including plant medicine. I've never smoked or, you know, anything. And
you've never smoked weed?
No, ever? I've never smoked weed ever. I've never I've never drinking a beer or anything.
Hold up.
Yeah. Yeah.
why not smoke a joint, just be like, so now I know what that's like, or
right? Yeah. I think, that's a big conversation. I mean, that right there. I mean, well, okay, before we get into it, I've been thinking more about like just, okay, well, I'll get into
it makes it obviously, you know, I know it's a thing because you've never done it. And then the more time that goes by, it's kind of black and white. And I was just curious. Not that I'm just sort of like, huh.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I
cut yourself a corner in a way, and I'm just curious. There must be a reason.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so from the age of like 14, 15 years old, that's around the age that Rasta came into my life, that lifestyle. that culture, belief system, whatever you want to call it. Within Rasta, that ganja is it's a sacrament. It's something that is partaken in ritual, and also it's known as a medicine. And all the good you know, benefits and elements that come from it. And with that being said, as a young man or kid, really, being around that young, I'm the youngest of five kids. So my sister's the oldest. But watching my brothers and watching my friends, who most of the time my friends were all older than me, it was a really, it was a poor, I didn't have a good role model as far as ganja goes. Like, everyone, I saw fights over it. I saw friends overdoing it. I saw it used in a party atmosphere way too much. I saw fights. I saw like real like danger happening because of like friends that were, you know, that were selling it. And there was just too much negativity around it that was outweighing the positive side. So, and not only that, but like I would kick it with people that like we're supposed to have this clear vision of creation, and they're too gone to like get down. And mind you, like I'm someone who could really put like get myself in what would be I guess considered a truly iry, you know what I'm saying, like way of creation, and just like doing bugged out strange psychedelic influenced music. And so that was one of the reasons. Another reason is I've been able to access really beautiful highs from love, sex, music, lighting.
Lighting.
Really, I like love it. Lighting, like there's something about light that is really special. And
yeah. I had a buddy who would carry in his backpack light bulbs, and he would like swap them out at places. He's like, let's make this better.
Word. That makes total sense. I mean, I made an album called Plum Mood. Well, actually before the album, I was doing mixtapes in like the mid-90s, and it was called Plum Mood, and it was part of the reason was because I would have this black light on sometimes all night. And whether I was making mixtapes or painting, I used to be a graffiti artist too. I would paint in my room. And shit, talk about a negative high, man. Having spray paint in the room is awful. But like there's something really special about lighting. And then also sex also is just, and then combine God and the idea of God and spirituality and the divine self and all these things. And also being able to, being around people who were on various substances all the time, I have been able to kind of take on aspects of that where I'm in it. And I kind of...
I mean, is that like, is that strictness and that discipline of yours, and is it sort of a personal ethos, or is it you're just sort of like, it just sort of has the way it is? I mean, because you must have also, I'm sure, had some role models, some experiences that were positive, and so, people who
okay.
were cool. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's a very strong choice you've made, you know, to stick with that.
Yeah. So, okay. So, wow, I just, yeah, I had a little lost memory there. I also thought, like, I was always with older girls, and I've been someone, and Yeah. Wow. That's a trip. When I was like 14, the girl I was with was 16. And I remember she used to drink too. And sometimes to the point, like she actually like threw up in my bed, like twice.
That's classic.
Like twice. Yeah. But like, twice. But I'm like I'm.
Most 14-year-olds wouldn't last the first time. They're like, I think this relationship is over.
Yeah. So like I'm 14, 15 years old and I'm watching my girl go through that. And so like, that's the alcohol part of it combined with just knowing people that have died and stuff like that because of just dumb things, car accidents, getting hit by trains. Mm-hmm. Like I know like 5 people, maybe 6 people who have been, who have died by train. Like
what?
Like that's ridiculous.
It doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense.
That's some weird train karma.
And yeah, it's stupid. So the combination of all these things, and then, okay, so what's interesting is that going from, as a Rasta man, like that was my path for many years. And
sober Rasta.
Yeah, sober Rasta man. And I grew my locks long and I took the vow very serious and, I didn't separate them. I let them get big and they were about like around to my knees. And I remember hearing a story about Siddhartha sitting on the side of a river before he became the Buddha. And at the time he was living the life of a sadhu. He had given up everything. He was growing long locks. He ate like a grain of rice a day. And so he's sitting on the side of this river just meditating. And he notices a boat coming by with a student and a teacher. The teacher was teaching a stringed instrument. And the teacher says to the student, if the strings are too loose, the instrument won't play. And if they're too tight, they'll break. And that story, that simple story, was such a big deal for me. Because I started to realize like, oh, I'm taking myself too serious, within my vows, and not just as a Rasta, because at that point when I heard that story, I had considered myself, more of, I guess, universal wisdom, which means, you know, all paths lead to the same place. And, just with the respect and admiration for all paths and their disciplines. And I realized that even though I was open, I was taking myself too seriously or too serious to the point of being, to being a bit rigid. I also...
And you never said, so therefore, I'll just smoke a joint and get it over with. And then that just, it's done. It's no longer the thing you haven't done. It's like, oh, I don't want to do that. I know what it is.
Yeah. So here's the thing is what that path brought me to was looking more at the Buddha, which brought me to thinking more about yoga. And since I was a kid, I had pictures of like Rastas on my wall and sadhus. And I didn't know as much about the sadhus. I just knew that they reflected Rastas, like you give up everything for God, you grow locks, you live in the mountains, you chant, you know. And but I didn't know that they were like yogis, like the people that where yoga really came from. And so my wife kind of talked me into going to a yoga class, and I went and I was like, oh, that's interesting. There's something to it. And then I went again and there's like, okay, that was okay. And then I went again and eventually I found a teacher. I was like, whoa, this is deep. And I eventually learned mantra and the importance of just sitting quiet. And the experiences I had with that, I have a lot of dear friends who do, you know, regular, you know, your everyday drinkers to master plants like, you know, ganja and whatever else, like, and mushrooms, whatever. And we've shared a lot of conversations that are really similar. They're comparable. And I'm just like, okay, it's not something that I need to go after.
You don't need to do anything, right? Or any of this. And there are many ways to skin the cat. And none of these experiences are anything more than you having another felt experience as yourself. I'm not pushing you. You don't have to, explain yourself. It's interesting to me because that kind of discipline is really impressive and admirable. And so I'm just sort of digging into where is that coming from? Because there's really nothing holding you back from that, but you've made that choice. It's not like you can't because it's religious, or you can't because you have an allergy or something like that, just because you choose not to.
Yeah.
And you've chosen not to many, many times.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, here's
debate. it's all over the place.
Plus, being around Rastas and including elders that were positive influences and who said, a Rasta elder who I would call the number one, my number one kind of Rasta elder, like teacher. And what I mean by teacher is just an older man who's a friend, but his name is Ronnie McQueen. And, he's the original bass player for Steel Pulse. And, he has so many stories, and he's like, Drez, well, if you ever try it, just do it, in the right setting, and you'll be all right. It's okay. And it's interesting because this same Rasta man, I also talked to him. We used to be in the same group together. We toured together. And I remember sharing the room with him the first time on tour, and I figured he had, long locks. And, I remember because I saw videos of him in the 70s, like playing with Steel Pulse. And I remember he took off his hat one day in the room as his locks fell to the floor. So when I heard the story about Siddhartha, I talked to Ronnie. I said, it was like, Rasta, I've been thinking about, cutting my locks. And he's like, he said, Drez, he said, don't worry about that. He said, I've cut feet off for years. He said, we live in the city. We're not living in the mountains. You got to be realistic with yourself. You have an understanding of the vow. It's okay. And so after that story about Siddhartha and talking to him, I was like, okay, I started to give myself that break, and I started to trim my locks, and I started the practice of yoga. And so here's the interesting thing is within yoga, the sadhus, the practice of smoking ganja is there also. It's a sacrament. It's ritual. The term ganja, which is really the term in Jamaica, it comes from India. It comes from the Ganges. So I just found all these similarities and just things that mirrored the Rasta to the sadhu. And it went even further. The last time I was in Jamaica, I was there for a yoga festival, and there was an elder Rasta named Sachi who did a whole talk about the connection. And
Joint with you if you want. Whatever it takes, it doesn't really matter. I don't even smoke, but it's just like, I'll take one for the team.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, I feel like, I don't know, man. I feel like it could be really interesting for you. Just so then you could be like, catalog that in your brain My friend had a funny phrase about smoking. He's like, it's like smoking a joint. It's like smoking a beer. It's like, not that big a deal. It's really not, you know, it's not a seismic shift in your consciousness. I think if you were to eat weed, that's a different experience. And that literally is a different experience with the drug. Do you drink coffee? Or are you kind of a straight edge person? Do you have any other ways? I mean, you do yoga, you're shifting your consciousness. I mean, it's just different ways of bending your brain in essence.
Yeah. Yoga, I've experienced really beautiful things with yoga that that I've talked to friends who are deep into psychedelics and they're like, whoa, like that's you have psychedelic experiences. And I'm like, okay, like there it is. And the other thing is what I've done also with middle of the night, like music making, like sleep deprivation stuff and whatnot. Like I've really experienced some beautiful things. Not to mention, like I said, meditation is like huge. And where I let music take me, I really let music pull me into the deepest stories that don't have a story. It becomes
I like that. The deepest story that doesn't have a story.
it just becomes a felt journey that is more about feeling and color than what the mind, I don't know, maybe it's what the body is. I don't know what to call it because I don't know what to call it. I know people who explain these things and I'm just like, oh my God, that's beautiful. You put that into words.
Well, it's all poetry and we're trying to explain the unexplainable.
Yeah.
That's why it's called the mystery.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. So, okay. So all that to be said is more than ever, because we talked about travel, just to bring that back around, is I've been more open than ever to ganja. And smoking, I wouldn't smoke it. And I would eat it, though. And I say that because... I know. Because, no, I have friends who...
Take it slow.
For That's sure. For sure. No, I have friends who smoke and they're like, what, Drez, you would eat it? Like, man, like that's a whole other kind of high that like knocks me out or that does this or that. And I'm just like, well, I literally have an aversion to smoke, like a little bit of,
what about vaporizing?
I suppose that would be an option. Yeah.
Everyone's vaping these days, all these vape pens.
Right.
You could go, if I were you, I love that we've been talking about smoking weed for 30 minutes about how you smoke it.
Yeah, yeah.
If I were you, I'd go into one of those weed shops and I'd find a vape pen that's like 10% or 5% THC, like really low, and the rest CBD, which is not psychoactive.
Okay.
So basically what you're getting is a very, very light weed pen. And I bet for you, yeah, you could hit that like, 1, 2, 3 times, nice, decent hits. You probably would just have very little high or you'd be high, but it wouldn't be crazy.
Yeah.
And if it was crazy, you'd know. You'd be like, oh, wow, I'm really sensitive. Yeah. I'm super high and I didn't have it. Because, you know, all these other pens and stuff, they're super strong, like 60%. See, it is way up there.
Yeah.
So if you had a 5-10%er, and a lot of CBD, which would be great too, because, you know, there's all those wonderful benefits of CBD. Very calming, non-psychoactive, all the other stuff, the cannabinoids.
Yeah. So
a great place to try it.
Okay. So that leads me to this is, so I tried CBD, just, I think 2 years ago or something was the first time I tried it. And, I was like, oh, like this is nice. But it was just nice. There was zero THC. I got it at like a it was in a Whole Foods, but it was a Whole Foods kind of store in like the Venice area. It was called like Rainbow Acres or something like that. Anyway, I got it from there. And I was just like, okay, that's okay. It's nice. Put it on their tongue, hold it there. Not much. Now, so about, let's say, a year ago-ish, someone is like, yo, you really should try my microdosing. Like that, you know, because the
microdosing like LSD or something, or
no, ganja, like just
microdosing ganja.
Yeah. So and I'm like, okay, so how? And they're just like a CBD that has THC in it, something like that, a certain amount. And I'm like, okay, or eating just a very small amount, like in a cookie or whatever. And so I tried the CBD with a little bit of THC. And I was like, okay, there's something to this CBD. And some people are like, well, you need a little bit of THC to activate the CBD to really get the, you know. And I think there's something to that. Like, I would like to get another bottle. I used it up. I felt more, well, I'll just call it highs from...
Dude. Got nothing to worry about, man.
Yeah, no.
Skills, like you'd be fine. You'd sail through that like a master sailor.
Yeah. The whole bottle of CBD, it was no problem. Like it was not an issue whatsoever. Someone did give me a little piece of a cookie, and I was just like, oh, I feel a little something. And it wasn't too much. And
great.
And at the same time, I'm like, I'm happy that... Here's the thing. I also know that I love sensations. Like, and I experience them deeply. From, again... music, love, sex, meditation, God, like that is spiritual experience. Like I have gotten so much inner and outer stimulation from all these things. It's like, part of me is like, okay, so there's the reasons of pain and hurt and learning from others, terrible things with substances. And then the other thing is I might love it. Like,
and so what?
And here's, okay, I'll tell you so what. And I love all my homies and all the great people I work with. I know some people who need it to record. Like they need to go.
You're not that person because you have not needed it all this time. Right.
Yeah. No, I feel that. And then I know other people who just, they need it to function, to not be anxious during the day. And I have my own anxieties about just life, you know, being a parent and traveling and, you know, like I really want to, I have times where I'm really on top of my practice and it's working great. And even not to say I don't have hard times with my breath and whatnot, but my breath has really like saved the day in many situations. I don't want to be stuck in a place where I didn't bring ganja on the plane or have access where I'm then feeling ultra anxious because I don't have it. And that's, you know, that's just, I'm just saying, adding on to other reasons. With all that being said, like I'm more open than ever. And I used to say never. Now I never say never about anything. Like I won't even say I'll never smoke it, but most likely, if I was to become a regular taker or a consumer, whatever, it would be, whatever, once or twice a month, and it would be probably eating it or, like you say, vaping it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so, and I'm just saying, like, so you're an irregular taker, you have so many other skills in your life, this should just be one more little thing, just like eating a piece of chocolate cake is enjoyable. That's your choice. You're able to do that. And then I can ask you, you know, did you smoke a joint? You're like, oh yeah, I did that in like 2019. That was it. And then we move on. That's like, there's something there for you.
Yeah.
Obviously something there. And so as a witness to that, there's no right or wrong to whether or not you decide to imbibe. But I think what's interesting there is, I was like, there's actually a sense of power for you by it not being an issue at all. It's you saying like, I'm high. I like it. I don't like it. Either or, it doesn't matter. And now I'm choosing what to do with it from moment to moment. It is not some boogeyman for you that's going to take over your life, because you've lived your life. You have your yoga practice. You have your meditation. You have your family. You have your music. You have all these things. And it's not, I mean, I was in a place once in my 20s, late 20s, where I smoked a lot and it was in charge of me. But it changed in my life to a point where it's like, it didn't jive with me anymore. And I don't really smoke much anymore. Occasionally, but there are a lot of times now where it's sometimes I might smoke socially a little bit. I'm like, oh, that was fun. Like going to a concert, it enhances a lot of things.
Yeah.
But I've learned now, like how I don't like it and how the things that it brings up. I'm like, yeah, I don't like that. And so I just don't choose to do it.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And before, I just did it all the time, even when if I didn't like it.
Yeah.
But I was immature, and you're not immature.
Yeah.
And so I just feel like it'd be this power thing for you to just be like, whatever, man, take it, not take it. It's up to me and I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm more, like I said, I'm more open to that than ever. And, I think there was a time where like boogeyman is a good way to put it, where it was the boogeyman because it was so prevalent in a negative way. Like it was just in my face constantly, and in a dangerous way. And, but it's been a long time since it felt that way. It's been longer than a few years where I've been like, this could be part of my life because,
Right. It's just more like by knowing, then you can just, it's, I don't know. You just know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You make your own decisions about it versus other people's experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting. I've also thought of this also as I'm in a really interesting place. Like in my career, I've been, I'll put it to you like this. There's a really great hip hop documentary. My wife and I were watching. We just finished it the other day. It was on Netflix. And
what's it called?
We watched it every day. My mind is blank because we're so deep into this. I'll think of it.
Okay.
There's a few, and some are like mediocre, and this one's really good. I just watch it and I just think about how deeply apart I am and was in hip hop and in the golden era of hip hop, and how like I either know the person, I know every other person, or am a friend of a friend of, or have shared the stage in one way or another, and just how I'm connected to so many people. And I look back at that and even current day, but how ganja, alcohol, whatever is such a communal and community building tool, and just a way that people, they just cool out, they relax with each other. That's like the common thing that we all smoke together or whatever, that I was always like this disciplined spiritual guy through all the years of that. And I observed it and watched it, and how I have to wonder if I would be in a different place in my career. Mind you, I'm happy in my career, but there's been times even now where I'm like, what am I doing? And it's interesting that like if I was a partier or hung out more in this situation or that situation, if I didn't leave the room because there was so much smoke or whatever, who I would have gotten to build more with or gotten deeper with because of that communal aspect.
Yeah, but you are, you know, you are who you are. And that's exactly now who you are. So that, I mean, that is how it's led to this exact, this unique place that you are. And you hit it on the head, man, when you said, you know, you called it a tool. And all these things also are rituals.
Yeah, yeah, very much
they're
so.
They're part of human experience. And they are tools for us in the same way bread and food and the sugars we eat are tools, or the energies we get from protein, or the coffee we have with people as we talk to each other, or the cigarette, the tobacco that's used in shamanic ceremonies or used just to sit around and roll together,
yeah,
or drink some drinks. And these are all just part of the human experience. And like any tool, you can abuse it or you can build things with it.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And they're all just here on the planet for the taking. You have to admit it's kind of interesting,
yeah,
that there are these plants and things on this planet, and we're on this planet, and some of them, you put it in your body, and they interface with your neurons in such an easy way, like a puzzle piece, and things start to do things inside you. There's probably a reason for that.
Yeah.
You know, even just on an evolutionary level. And it's not, there's no here or there to it or judgment. It's just more like these are here for us to use or not. And I just see you as such a creative being and someone who enjoys sensation experience. And so I just want you to have all the experiences. And then you're just like, great. That was another one. Just put that on my belt. What else is out there in the world? Because there's a lot.
Yeah, yeah. No, I dig it. I'll tell you this. I've always had a respect for ganja specifically. And
you're a rock?
Yeah. I mean, I've known and not just thought in theory, I've known the good that it does. But I think for so long, like I said, the negative things were just so in my face. Plus it's the combination of the things that people do. Like, I mean, I've sat with brothers, I've sat with friends where their heart is beating out their chest, or, you know, we're on tour and one of the guys has to be carried down from the hotel room, and I'm sitting in the back seat to make sure he breathes for the next 6 hours on the way to the next show. Or, and I'm the only one who is clearly seeing what's going on because the other guys are a little, I mean,
yeah, you get the short end of the stick.
Yeah. So, like there's less of a judgment and more of a, because I know exceptional people who do like crazy stuff, like, you know, who've done or do heroin and stuff like that. And it's just like, yo, it's more about like a, man, you could only last so long. Like, I also know, I mean, I know two people in the last, there's more people. I mean, the amount of people I know in the recent years, a handful that have died, a few people who have lost limbs, some things due to substances, some things due to diabetes, just various things, just catching up with people.
Trains.
Yeah, all that. Yeah, real trains and life trains, or how my wife would call it, life trucks. Like, there's definitely a place for it that I respect and I understand. And I also know, like, the dangerous side. And I think you're right that I'm pretty clear of the dangerous side. I'm not worried that I'm going to become, you know, some kind of fiend or whatever. But I could see myself being someone who partakes in ganja one way or another.
I mean, what's the worst that happened? You smoke a joint and then you grow out your hair, grow dreads, become a musician and tour.
Yeah. I mean,
You already are.
Yeah, yeah, right, it's right. Like, well, I mean, I'll tell you this. A big issue I had early on was it was the discipline Rastaman side was like in 1990 when I started locking. And so back then it wasn't common to see people with locks. And so all throughout the 90s, it wasn't really until the last, you know, I mean, the 2000s, people, it became more than ever a hairstyle. Like, but it's very normal, even up to this day, like people assume that I'm a hippie or that I'm a deadhead or something like that. And early on, that was very offensive for me because I was coming from a disciplined spiritual side where it's a vow. And I had a bunch of hippies coming up to me asking for whatever kind of drugs. And a large amount of them, the younger deadhead people are actually, you know, not all of them, because I know some great deadheads, but straight up, they're dirty. Like, they stink, their locks are poorly taken care of. And that was really offensive to me. Like, why are you taking this little part of a vow and trying to make it like there's any similarity between us? There's not. You're part of a whole other system. And one of the reasons for having locks, it's a spiritual vow. And it goes into like biblical things and it goes into a bunch of things. Like, that's a whole other conversation. But it also is, it's simply saying, I am not like you. I'm not part of your system. And that's the Babylon system. That's the system that oppresses people. And, you know, so I just felt like you guys are taking this serious thing. And so that, like, I used to have a strong aversion to like hippies. And it's really interesting. Like, it was judgmental. It was often not true, in certain situations, where it's just somebody that's asking for ganja or whatever. But I experienced a lot of weird judgment and a lot of racism, even within that hippie community. Like, there, it's weird shit, man. Like,
what happens.
Yeah,
you know? It happens. People size you up.
Yeah, yeah. The simple thing of... Yeah, the simple thing of just hair, the amount of things you hear, so much beauty comes from people. They open up to you. They ask you questions in a nice way. And
I don't have that problem. I chose the path of baldness so that I could not have.
Yeah, and then so there's the beautiful side, and there's the negative side of ignorance and racism and constantly being asked for drugs. You know what I mean?
Anytime I go to a foreign country, I get everyone's asking me for drugs. I don't know why. Yeah. It's like, do you want drugs? Do you have drugs?
But ultimately, it's all good, man. Like,
it's all good. Yeah. Either way, it is all good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, shit. I didn't mean to dominate all of our time. We're both totally sober, and you know, it's okay. It's all good.
Yes.
I think, you know, through that journey, it actually, I'm learning a lot about your inner journey, which is really what I like to get into anyway. It's just sort of like learning about people's process and internal process, and not get too much into the surface details of things, but it's sort of, you can use those as doorways into, you know, what's that internal thing for you that's been going on. And there's a lot there about your own discipline and your path, and you know, how you find your pleasure, and you know, what you've been thinking about, and I don't know, I think it's good. It sounds to me like you're in a good place, and you're in such a new place too, one of transition, sort of. It's one of some kind of nodal point in your life of something new wanting to emerge, because you have like a new child and you've moved to a new place, experimenting with some new music. Some old patterns in the past are coming up to the fore, being like, well, let me examine these. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's interesting to hear you say all that because it's something I've been feeling, and I occasionally have these conversations just about change. And I mean, I have these conversations with my wife all the time. But it's a new place. And also, man, add injury to that. Like, I herniated like discs in the beginning of 2017. I had to cancel shows. And so like, I'm moving my body differently. On top of all the other change, there's change in my yoga practice. There's change in the way I put on my shoes, and like, yeah, it's a trip. It's really interesting. Yeah.
Hey, you should check out this book called Healing Back Pain Now by Dr. Sarno.
Okay.
It may have nothing to do with what you're going through, but it was something that was recommended to me for some pain that I was going through. Mm. And it helped me out. Yeah, it has to do with the brain and pain, sort of psychological stuff.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'm sure that that there's psychological stuff that is part of it. Just because of what was going on right around that time when it happened. That's right. When is a month after or 2 months, a month or two after, we found out that we were pregnant. And, so that combined with years and years of skateboard injuries, including a broken neck. I broke my neck when I was 14 or 15. And, And, it combined with travel, like, this injury happened after a flight, getting off a flight from New Zealand. And, so it's all very much connected, combined with, so much stuff. I mean, I definitely know that the whole body holds intelligence, which means emotions included. And I'd love to check out that book.
Yeah. So if you were a skateboarder, are you familiar with VC Johnson, VCJ? He does all the Palo Peralta artwork, like the skull coming through. It's like that classic image of like there's a skull kind of coming through this paper or something that's on the back of the skateboards.
I know it as well as I know my own fingerprint. You got to understand, skateboarding was such a big part of my life. And there's a really good quote. It's something like, a skateboarder isn't someone who skates. Oh, I wish I could remember. It's something like, isn't someone who skates every day.
Let me blow your mind here.
Yeah.
So first off, you should check out his website, VCJ Graphics, because he's just an amazing artist.
Yeah.
And he's a mystic. A friend of mine lives in Santa Barbara in the hills.
He's still in Santa Barbara. What a trip.
Still draws for Palo Peralta.
Yeah, I don't know him, but I know that Santa Barbara has, there used to be the Powell skate park was in Santa Barbara, and their warehouse was there and all that. And I skated there a couple times. And this is in the,
So he became a friend like 10 years ago, and I would go to his house, and he does like readings for hours. Like he's a mystic.
Mm.
He's not on this planet. And I would record them because this is way back when I started doing field recordings. And the first person I sampled was him, and he's the voice of the 10 laws, my song 10 laws.
What a trip. I think I know what you're talking about. I'm pretty
and
sure.
And so BC Johnson is Mr. 10 laws, and he's like, he's a super out there dude, amazing dude. So I think if you go over to his website, I believe it's VCJ. I was just looking at it actually a couple days ago. Uh-huh. I don't know why. I just wanted, VCJ Graphics. And he's got prose poetry and then all these crazy drawings on here, you know. And you would love it because you're into you have history.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I skated almost my whole life and then I broke my neck. And then skated again. I was in two contests with my neck brace still on. And And then I skated for another year or so. And then I had a knee injury and I was like, oh, I don't want to get surgery or anything. I'm going to heal it myself. And then, that's when music took over my life, when I was trying to heal my knee. I was already DJing a little bit, or I was getting into it. And then music took over my life and I stopped from about 91 or 92 till 2000. I was on tour with, it was like Del the Funky Homo Sapien and Haiku d'Etat or something. And the tour manager was like, Drez, we got to get you aboard. And I skated again for another 10 years and got good again. I got good again. I toured, when I would tour with hip hop groups, we would also find skate parks. And so like in between days off, whatever, or before the club, like we'd be at a skate park. And then 2010, I was just like, I have to stop. I don't hold back and I get hurt too much. But that's something that, oh, that's interesting. Talk about, I mean, that's where I got high from. Like, really, I mean, and now not having that, it's like having wings and not being able to fly. Like, I think about it every single day, skateboarding. Like, wow.
Then you do it all. Go out there. You need some releases right now. You can go out, skate a little bit. You can have your first joint. You can go smoke a beer. I can't wait for you. I'm excited for you. It's a new chapter of Drez's life. It's like, I'm whatever I want to be.
So, okay, wait, just side note. Right before I broke my neck, I was shooting some videos to send. I think I had sent one to Tracker or something, and I had got a letter back from Tracker. Tracker was a truck company, and trucks are what hold the wheels on the skateboard, not a truck, but, and like Tony Hawk was riding for Tractor, and Tracker. Tracker, and I got a letter saying, we want to hear more of you, like see more of you. And I was like, I'm going to be on the same team as Tony Hawk. And my goal was to be on the Bones Brigade, part of the Power Peralta team. And, but then music and broken neck and knee injury, all that stuff, like shifted my dream.
Soul opened up other doors.
Indeed. Yeah, man.
Yes. Well, hey, we should wrap this up, but I'm excited to see what your soul opens up next. And as usual, I'm sure I'll cross paths with you. Actually, I saw a date that we are crossing paths at Esalen.
Oh, word.
Around the solstice. Yeah, because I'm doing a weekend there for the solstice, leading a retreat with Radha June 21st. Whatever. And you're there with Janice Stone like Monday through Friday, I believe.
Ah, so we'll get some good time.
Yeah, and I'm trying to lobby them. Well, they're interested. They're just really busy to like overlap, like do something with you that, you know, with that week. And then I really want to do like a big concert that Friday because it's the solstice. And, you know, it's also the release of chapter 3 of the Ram Dass record I'm doing.
Oh, nice.
And I'm doing the retreat that day. So I'm like, let's go big, you know, let's do something cool.
Wait. Your retreat starts on that Friday?
Yeah, it's Friday to Sunday. It's like a weekend retreat.
Okay, and ours ends that Friday, right.
I think it does. Yeah, it's like a yoga with Janet Stone, right?
Yeah, ooh, that's tricky. Well, I hope something happens there. Yeah, would be cool.
I might, you know, be able to come early and, I don't know, do something for the yoga week or something, like on Wednesday or something.
Word.
So we'll see. Yeah. It's all in motion.
Cool. Very good.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. Well, where can people find you and follow what you're up to and, you know, all that, see you live, check out your stuff?
Yeah. Instagram is where I do most of my updating posts on where I'm going to be, things I have coming out. Definitely, I'm easy to find on Spotify and iTunes, Amazon, all the digital download stores. You could go to djdrez.com. That's djdrez.com to find out a bunch of stuff about me. And then I have a YouTube channel that I'm trying to, you know, give a little bit more attention to. And I'm out there. Just type in DJ Drez and you could find me.
So, cool. And Instagram is just DJ Drez?
Yeah, DJ Drez. Yeah.
Cool. Right on. Well, so, I'll put that in the show notes, your link.
Cool.
Or links. And maybe we'll do this again sometime. But thank you for giving me some time.
It's truly a pleasure. Yeah, man. Thank you.
All right. Go smoke that joint.
Word up. All right, man.
Bada bing, bada boom. Thank you, Mr. DJ Drez, for giving us your time. I was really intrigued. There was like a psychological dive into discipline and motivations and compassion for ourselves. Man, I loved it. He's such a cool guy. Check out his music. Check out his site. I'm sure if you're out there in the world, you're going to see him on stage because he gets around. Thanks, Drez. This song that you hear in the background is called Threat Level Love. It is from the album Love Bomb, which you can find wherever you find Muzak. And I hope to see you out there on the ceremony tour. I hope to hear from you when we share Ram Dass Chapter 2 here, March 22nd. If you'd like to host a listening gathering, email us, info@eastforest.org. That's also the email where you can send questions, comments, whatever. Just say, hey, maybe read some of those guys on the air. But I so appreciate everything you guys do to support, you know, Chapter 1, because of you, made it to number, I don't remember the numbers on Billboard, number 2 on New Age and number 5 on something else. But it charted, which is super cool. And that means that you guys are doing your part, which is spreading the word and just being part of this listening family, this family of energy. So thanks for doing your thing. Thanks for walking your walk. Don't take any shit, but you know what? May the forest be with you. And keep doing it with grace. Peace.